Next Step, number 713, February 3rd, 2022.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Bittersweet. Yeah, if we had a word of the day, such a puzzle or such a concept as a word of the day, that would be it for today. Bittersweet. I like that word. Actually, we don't use it often enough, but doesn't that just describe most of life, right? You take the good with the bad, you take the bitter with the sweet. Bittersweet. There's so many things that are bitter and are sweetened. Coffee, you put a little bit of sugar in it. You have episodes in life that are very bitter, and you switch them around, right? They become sweeter, or they become less bitter, let's say it that way, right? You ever measured those out? This past weekend, we were down in San Diego, and we consecrated the new Armenian church there, and big shout out to all of our listeners down in the San Diego area. You have a new St. Sarkis Church. Beautiful church. I mean, really beautiful. There's structurally, architecturally, it was so pleasant to look at, and especially to be in there. I had a really incredible opportunity that was given to me. They invited me to come up there for 3 days and do the commentary on the consecration process. So this is a very special service for me because we consecrated a church in 1992 up in Cupertino, the St. Andrew Church. And at that time, I had a chance to really study the service and do a lot of the translation on that. And so whenever a new church is consecrated, I really get excited about. And as I said last week, you know, consecration is not like a lunar eclipse, it's more like a solar eclipse. In other words, they don't happen too often, but when they do, you have to be in the right place at the right time, and you get to see it. Most of the solar eclipse, I mean, if there's a lunar eclipse, most probably you can get up at oddball hours in the middle of the night and see it, providing there's no clouds and everything. But a solar eclipse happens rather quickly. We had a chance to see one in, I think it was 2018, up in the Oregon. We went up to Oregon as a family, and we viewed the solar eclipse. Doesn't happen often. It happens actually every couple of years, but you could be in a weird place on planet Earth. It could be like in the middle of the ocean, and you know, what are the chances of you being there in the middle of the ocean? Yeah, most of the Earth is water, so chances are good that the solar eclipse is going to be over water, right? Very good. 75% good. But it happens that you get a chance to be there. And it's the same thing with church consecrations. It's not like so infrequent that it's a once-in-a-lifetime. It's not a Halley's Comet event. It's more like a solar eclipse. It happens every so often. And if you can be there at the right time, right place, it is just a beautiful, beautiful service. And this one was. It was just really over the top. It was magical. It was really magical, everything about it. And I'll have a link on today's show notes, because what the church did was they moved it over to a YouTube, the broadcast. We broadcast on the Facebook page, and they moved it over to a YouTube. So now it's archived. And I would love it if you didn't get a chance to see it. It's an opportunity to see it. So we did 3 days. The first day was the consecration of the pictures. of the icons. The second day was the actual consecration and naming of the church, which got the name St. Sarkis. And the third day was the first divine liturgy. Just a beautiful service, and we were basking in that sweetness when we got a call that my brother-in-law had had a heart attack. And I guess it became from sweet to bitter. And so we sat in the car and rushed off to L.A. And sure enough, he was going through a lot that day, and he succumbed. He passed away early in the morning, Monday morning. And so we went from that sweet experience of the consecration of new life and building to this picture of death, this experience of death and having to be there. And my brother-in-law was one of those guys that, I don't know, he was like a magnet. Everybody wanted to be his friends. I got to my in to the family, to my wife's family, through him. I knew him before I knew my wife. And what was interesting is at our son's wedding just 2 weeks ago, I went up to him and I just said, "Do you realize I've known you longer than I've known my wife?" And not realizing that it would be the last conversation that we had. And this week, early Monday morning, he passed away. And it gives you an opportunity to, of course, reflect on the passing. But what I want to do is like juxtapose the sweetness of life with the bitterness of death. And realize that, you know, it's often said that these are two faces of the same coin. And you really don't realize it until you have an opportunity the way we had. In other words, to come from that sweetness, to come from that beautiful new beginning of a church, a new beginning of a community, to the end of a life that was so full of meaning for definitely us, for the family. And how do you reconcile those two? It's a difficult position to be in. And what I'd like to do is share some thoughts with you, because I think more often than not, you will find yourself in this kind of position. It may not be as drastic as somebody dying in your life, but if you really think about it, check it out, and go through your own history, you'll find many events that really coexist together. And really, it is what we call bittersweet. There are bitter moments, there are sweet moments. And that bridge between the two is up to us to make. I mean, think about it for a moment. You can come out of a beautiful event, which we did, 3-day beautiful event, and then all of a sudden be hit with the news that a loved one has had a heart attack and you need to be up somewhere else, and you go and, you know, he passes away. And so all of a sudden it's black and white, just right in front of you. The gray has gone away. Now, I know that's not the case all the time. I mean, there's a lot of times where the gray is there and, you know, it just happens. I think of divorce. It's not like just one day you wake up and say, "All right, we're getting divorced." But it's a buildup. It's many things. It's like a cup of coffee, right? It's bitter. You start putting sugar in it, a little bit of sugar or cream, and you start stirring it. And it gets a little bit sweeter and sweeter, sweeter, and the bitterness goes away. It takes some time, as opposed to a light switch where it's just dark one moment and light the next moment, bitter one moment and then sweet the next moment. There's different experiences, different ways, and that gray scale is really the factor, right? Sometimes it gets gray, sometimes it just goes from dark to light. Or from light to dark, from sweet to bitter, or from bitter to sweet. Yeah, it happens. It happens. And that bridge between the two is what we're talking about today. What is the bridge? Because that really is one of the things that we can control. We build bridges. Those bridges in our lives are important. They're the connection that we have. They connect two different worlds. I've shared this with you many times about the church. It's the church that connects us with this life, with life eternal. It's that bridge, right? And so we sometimes forget about the utilitarian function of a bridge. In other words, a bridge is meant to go from one side to the next. And so in the case of our church, a lot of times many people get on that bridge, and it's so beautiful, it's so filled with mysticism, symbolism, that they forget that, wait a minute, it has a function. And think about it in your lives. I'm sure while you're driving, you've gone over many bridges. Imagine, and case in point, I've done this when living up north, over the Golden Gate Bridge and over the New Bay Bridge. You know, these are architectural wonders where you just, I have been under those gates, the Golden Gate Bridge. You just stand there and you look. It's so beautiful. I mean, it makes you wonder, like, who did this? How did this happen? And that wondering, that conversation that you have with yourself is important. But it's not the function of the bridge, right? The bridge is not there for you to admire. It's a secondary purpose of that bridge, for it to look good, right? Aesthetically, you want it to look good. You don't want just a bunch of metal spanning two land masses, right? You want it to look pretty. And so you get up there and go, this is beautiful. Well, the same thing with the church, right? It's connecting us with life eternal, with God. A lot of times you get on board and you just look at it and you go, whoa, so beautiful. And you get lost in it. Hey, there's a committee over there I should join. There's a reason to do that. And you forget that it has a purpose. Same thing, the bridges that we construct in our lives are meant to get us from bitterness to sweetness. And sometimes those bridges also work the other way around. In other words, they're two-way traffic. We may be in a very, very bitter area and move it towards the sweet, which is hopefully what we try to do. But there's also many times where we are in a sweet position, such as was our case this last weekend. We were in this very, very sweet position of being there in San Diego, watching the new church go up, the prayers, the energy level that was there, and then receiving this news that a loved one is now been taken to the hospital. And especially in these days of COVID, where hospital visits are not easy anymore. You can't go and visit, you can't go and see, and you realize that this may be it. And sure enough, it was. So all of a sudden, from the sweetness, you're thrown into the bitterness. So let's examine, what are those bridges? How do we build them? And then more important, how do we get across them? And not just stay on those bridges, right? Between bitterness and sweetness. But to go and make it into a sweetness. And, you know, each of us comes to it at a different place. Each of our metabolism is a little bit different. And so we construct those bridges in a different way. But let's kind of take a look at overall. Obviously, one of the first things we might say is that the bridge is really has to do a lot with our attitude. What are our attitudes? Do we want to get over? Sometimes we get into this bitter area, and we have to admit it feels good sometimes with the pity, feeling sad for ourselves. And we know that that's like it escalates or de-escalates, you know, it gets worse and worse, doesn't it? And sometimes there's a comfort in that. Not that it feels good, but there's a comfort in being in that dark position, in that bitter position. But obviously, the healthy way is to get out of that. You don't want to exist in that bitter position because ultimately it doesn't feel good. It's not good to be in that area. And this is whatever the condition may be, whatever the situation may be. It could be a quick one, where you're moving from bitter to sweet quickly, like an on-off switch, or it could be a lingering one. And we see this all too often, where it lingers and lingers and lingers. And you know, one of the biggest problems that we have today is the lingering as a world community because of COVID. It's been lingering for 2 years. As much as we try to get out, you know, it still brings you down because you realize that. I think I was discussing it with a doctor friend the other day. And the idea is that we've tried everything. We've done everything. We've gotten the two vaccines. We've also gotten the booster, and we're wearing masks. Okay, and then we're still getting it. We're still getting this virus. So what's going on? It just lingers and lingers and lingers and takes you down. So how do you move on? How do you move to that sweetness? And obviously the first means of building a bridge is just our attitude. To say that I'm not going to go into that area. The other means of building a church, of course, is our faith. And that's why I'm bringing it up here on The Next Step. It's a show about our faith. And here's the interesting thing. All of this is taking place on last Monday. Between Sunday and Monday, we went from sweetness to bitterness. And I get an email Tuesday morning from the Lady Society of our diocese. Like, you know, like they have an organization. And once a year they have a women's prayer day. It's at the beginning of Lent to kind of put us into the stream of Lent. So I get this email. This is like, remember, after my own personal issues, going from sweetness to bitterness. And it's from the head of the Ladies' Society, and she asks, would I be the speaker at the Women's Prayer Day service? And what is the topic? Loss and resilience. Wow. Timing, loss and resilience. Like, after you have that loss, how do you find the strength to be resilient enough to overcome the hurt? And as a priest, I've seen too many times in life, people who have had major loss and have get caught up in that spiral of negativity. And in fact, I know many that just cannot get themselves above it. And I'll tell you who they are. They're people who stay there because of the comfort level. Yeah, they'll tell you they hate it, it's horrible and everything, but there is a comfort in saying that this is me, woe is me, oh, how horrible am I, that these things happen. There's a comfort in saying that, look at my bad luck. And all this is going on. I mean, this is really pretty weird how all these things come together. Okay, so I'm going from sweetness to bitterness, personal life. We have the sweetness of the church opening. We have the bitterness of my brother-in-law passing away. I've got now this invitation to talk about loss and resilience. And then what happens? Like, you can't write this stuff. How does it all come together? I know people want to say it's coincidence. I don't think so. Check this out, okay? This magazine, internet magazine called Armenian America Internet Magazine, asked me for an interview. This is a couple weeks ago or something, and I'd give an interview, and I'd do it, okay? So that same night, they send me the rough draft of take a look at it before we publish. So this is now Tuesday night. All these thoughts are going on in my head. I've got the sweetness, bitterness. I've got death going on. I've got loss and resilience as a topic. And then all of a sudden, I get this note from the publisher saying, the magazine's ready to go to print. Would you take a look at it? And I open it up and I read, and they have selected pictures to accompany the article from the internet. Pictures of my life. Pictures and stories. And the first one that's up there is a picture of me and my grandmother. I mean, this is pretty wild, okay? Like, all of a sudden I'm thinking of, like, how do we build those bridges? Where, I mean, those bridges, where is that resilience? If there was ever a resilient person, if there was anybody in my life who I have looked up to, it has been my grandmother. My grandmother, who should not have existed but did exist and gave us a life. And there it is. There's a picture of me and her drinking coffee. Oh, how old is that? That was, must be, that was pre-seminary. I would say that must be at least a 45-year-old picture. Yeah, I'm saying this because I'll put a link on today's show notes and you can check that out. So I'm going to tell you the lessons that we learned from Grandma, okay? Coming up in the second portion of today's show. Right now, we take a break, as we do every week, to play a song, something to digest what we've just heard, but also something pleasing to the ears. And I hope you're going to enjoy this one. This is off of a new album that just came out from a legendary rock and roll band called Jethro Tull. Yes, started in 1968, and here it is, 53 years later, still producing new material. Can you believe it? And this album, with biblical references, I'm going to tell you all about it. Here's today's pick, Sad City Sisters.
Hard to choose between them. Tramps on a night out, out of season. Bare legs and arms at the taxi stand. Shoes and hand cold curve to freeze on. What desperation, what souls possessed. With lonely demons are put to test. Why should we worry, why should we care? That warrior horseman's shame defiles them. Why tip the cabbie plus his fare? So send them home to stumble in and toss their liquors in the bin. Repentance blooms and melts away, mocked by dark unearthly silence, replaced by incubus at play. Bad sisters stare graffiti walls, stare in return when weekend calls. The empty bragging, the empty lies, in anguish echo through empty malls. What desperation, what souls possessed, with lonely demons are put to test. Why should we worry, why should we care, that warrior horsemen shame defile them. The six-gun notches say it all. It was hard to choose between them. Tramps on a night out, out of season. Out of body and out of mind. Out of dark and into reason. Disrupts the earthly silence. Guilty heroes at his day. Hands two sad souls through a gap in.
Sad City Sisters off of the new Jethro Tull, The Zealot Gene album. And this is really wild. Because remember that streak of coincidences that I told you about? Well, got this album before all that started. I got this just before we were heading out to San Diego. I was supposed to get it on the 28th, and it arrived on the 27th. The actual date of release was the 28th of January. And I had pre-ordered it, and I got it on the 27th. So you can imagine how excited I was. And then I figured out, well, that's one of the advantages of being late in the time zone, because I figured when it was first released, it was released on the 28th. But we were in the West Coast, so we happened to get it early by our standards, not by world standards. Anyway, you guys figure it out. Go to the standard of world time and you'll figure out. That's not the point. But what is that this and the other events that followed were a series of what people may consider coincidence. But this arrived, and I was able to listen to this as some of those bittersweet things were unfolding in my life. Now, this particular album, The Zealot Gene, it's Ian Anderson's attempt to really kind of identify some of the severe feelings that come from religion, particularly from the Judeo-Christian tradition, because he's using the Bible as reference. Let me share with you what he writes over here, okay? He says, "For the most part, my songwriting relies on the references of visual images, whether photographic or painterly. In the Zealot Gene collection, the trigger was text, immortal words from 1611, which for me immediately conjure visual images, and so we are back to my use of pictures to interpret and vocalize the subject material." Of course, 611 referring to the King James Version. I'm mentioning this because we in the Orthodox go way before that. Okay, these songs take strong emotions as ideas to expand upon. They are moments of loyalty, compassion, tolerance, and love. But then there are also contrasting tales of rage, vengeance, envy, greed, and treachery. I think we have, as part of our human condition, an inner rage which defines so much of our identity. Implanted in almost all of us is the tendency to get mad about some subject we are obsessed with. We all too easily open our doors to the indoctrination by pious cant and corrosive partisan political extremism. Toss in prejudice, xenophobia, and hard right conservatism for good measure. Well, it is a very, very powerful album. From my first few listens to it, I love it. But you know, I'm partial. Kind of love all the music that they put out, and I usually do this. But let me read to you the tracks, okay? Because the first one is Mrs. Tibbet. You know what? It's interesting because he's put biblical quotations here. Genesis 19, Jacob's Tale is the second song, Genesis 25. One of my favorite that I'm already in love with is called Mine is the Mountain from Exodus chapter 20. I mean, it's like a plays off of his earlier theme. When I say earlier, like 50 years ago, My God in the Aqualung album. Then he has the Zealot Gene, and what we just heard, of course, Shoshana Sleeping is Song of Solomon, but what we just heard, Sad City Sisters, Ezekiel 23. Let me give you the quote, 2 to 11. It's kind of cool. But the rest of the album goes into the New Testament writings. Now listen to the titles. Barren Beth, Wild Desert John. Well, who is Barren Beth? Of course. Elizabeth, right? The Betrayal of Joshua Kind. Matthew 26. Where did Saturday go? Luke 23. Three loves, three. From John 21. And this is, it's just so beautiful when you see it next to the scripture. Anyway, the last two songs in here is In Brief Visitation and The Fisherman of Ephesus. What I love about Ian Anderson, and I've always loved about it, is that he challenges you to go beyond just the mere reading of scriptures or the mere understanding of what your faith is. He challenges you to really think, to push it, push the limits. What is it that you're believing? So that, you know, you challenge yourself. And, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. It works for me. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. I'll have a link on today's show notes to The Zealot Gene, the newest album in the Jethro Tull discography.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better. Some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments. With lovers and friends, I still can recall.
Lessons from Grandma. That's what I promised you on the first half. I said, we're going to continue with lessons from Grandma. What do grandmas have to teach? Well, if you are a grandma or you happen to be a grandpa, you probably think like, hey, the world should learn a lot from me. Until you meet like somebody like my grandma, and then you say, whoa, jaw drops. And you go, whoa, how did they do this? I've been in awe of my grandmother, her story, her life story. And I want to share a little bit with you because it falls into this whole thing. So again, let's just recount the coincidences because there are no such things. And people don't believe me when I tell them that there are no such thing as coincidences. It all falls into place if you kind of allow the flow, if you allow God to just lead you. In other words, no, I'm not saying that it's predestined. I just mean relax. Let it all come together. Relax. Don't fight it because so many things happen one in an order. So I get this album, The Zealot Gene, on the 27th. The 28th, we leave for San Diego. I work for 3 days doing these interpretations. I have this most mystical, magical night. And by the way, I also should say that we ordered a convertible VW. Yes, a little bit older model. So going to San Diego, we would love to open the top of it. But it got cold over there. So we had the top open for, I want to say, maybe a few hours out of the whole trip. So it's all coming together. You've got this VW with the top down. You're listening to the Zealot Gene, Jethro Tull, and you get there and you go through this magical, mystical 3 days of consecration, of sharing the stories and everything. And then you step out from the sweetness. You get the call that your brother-in-law, or in this case, Susan, got the call that her brother had a heart attack, and we've got to get back, and we just pack up everything really quickly. And from sweetness, we go into bitterness. And from bitterness, the next day proved even more bitter when we lost my brother-in-law at a young age of 66. And difficult as it was, Susan had to go and tell her parents. And you can imagine, you know, it's one of the hardest and most difficult things in life, because the natural order, of course, is children bury their parents, and in this case, parents have to bury their child. And this was a big loss because he was such just a loving, kind gentleman, and one that we really felt like we were very fortunate in, that in the last couple weeks we had a big family gathering, a wedding, and we were able to be together and at least share in that moment. And then the next thing comes up, which is somebody's inviting me to come and talk about loss and resilience. And then the next thing comes up. There's like this internet magazine where they've taken pictures, and it's a article about me, an interview about me, which, yes, I had given that interview, but I wasn't ready for the pictures. And the first picture that they've chosen is a picture from my very young days sitting with my grandmother, my hero. Now, put it all together. Connecting the dots. How do we make the bridge? How do we construct the bridge to go from the bitter to the sweet? A bridge so great that you're not stuck on that bridge, but you're moving on. And Grandma became this means for me, because I really felt like she had achieved that in her life. And she's been really an inspiration for me. Her life story has been an inspiration. Because if nothing else, she wasn't supposed to be here. And she was. Now, if she wasn't there, it's like, you know, going back to the future. If you kill your grandfather, then you're going to die, right? If my grandmother wasn't there, then I wouldn't be here. My kids wouldn't be there. And it would be, you know, it's like this. What would life be like if somebody was missing? Well, it's not just my grandmother. It was 1.5 million people that were killed during the genocide of 1915. And 1.5 million people that survived and were able to reconstruct their lives. And my grandmother was one of those people. And her life is nothing short of a miracle that is on par with what you read in the Bible. Yes, I will say this. Because we've got to start understanding that the miracles are around us. These are not just ancient history. I know, yeah, we read about parting of the sea. I'm going to give you a miracle that is even greater than that Red Sea. It's called life. It's called that people are living today when they shouldn't be living. I mean, think about that. Everything, your Red Sea, everything else depends on you understanding that there's a Red Sea out there. Well, what if you weren't there? But you're there because of a miracle. And that miracle is that life miracle. And my grandmother exemplified that miracle, how that happened. Look, she was a young little girl. You know, when you think about, like, even when you think about the story of Mary and Joseph and Jesus, Mary was a young little girl. She was a young, young girl. My grandmother was a young girl. She had a husband who was taken away by the Turks, as all young men were. She was left alone to defend for her two kids. She goes out, and her little kid, infant baby, dies while she is being exiled from her homeland. Imagine your home, not only your home, your whole neighborhood, your whole city is being torn apart and everybody is being exiled. You're being forced to leave. And where are you leaving? You're going out on the desert. And you have an infant baby who doesn't have any milk. She used to really, really swell up when she would tell us these stories, and in particular, Armenian organizations that were trying to pretend that they were helping. I guess during the acts of genocide, everybody kind of like wigged out. Of course they did, right? And so she's out there, and she loses her child. She's forced to dig a ditch and bury her child. And then continue with her other child, 2.5-year-old, who becomes my father's older brother. They start going through the desert, and they make their way to Greece. From Greece, they make their way to France, from France to America, and New York to Los Angeles. They get to Los Angeles, and the rest is history. I mean, she puts her kid through college. My dad goes through college, the son of genocide survivors, you know, goes on to become a professional as a pharmacist, graduates. He has children, and those children move on. They bring children. And so you've got this whole generational thing of new people creating new lives. And this all because somebody at some point refused to put her feet down and say, I'm sorry, I can't walk anymore. Instead, she picked up her feet and kept walking. So what was it that kept her walking? What was the strength that she found to move from that bitterness to the sweet? And it was interesting because she shared that with me. It was a prayer that she wrote for me. And I have that. It's a small little writing that she's written on a piece of paper. And I had that inscribed on a bracelet that I wear. Imastutun hor Jesus, durinz imastutun. Jesus, wisdom of the Father, grant me your wisdom so that I may think, speak, and do that which is good in your sight. Save us from evil thoughts, words, and deeds, and have mercy on all your creatures and on me, a sinner. A prayer that was written by Nerse Schnorrali, 12th century. My grandmother would repeat that, and she told me as a mantra. She got on her knees and said, God, everything I've lost, don't allow me to lose my reason, my brain, my ability to think. And she pushed herself out of that desert, pushed herself into Greece, from Greece to France. That's where she met my grandfather, who had escaped the genocide at another place, and from Harpert. And she, in his story was interesting. He was in the American Legion. That's a whole nother story. The American Legion, yeah. The American Legion was out there. It had gone all the way out to the Orient. Anyway, he was in France, and there they got married. My father was born. They came to America from New York. Two people who shouldn't have been living are now creating a new life. Two people, uneducated, nothing, but were able to give shelter. And, you know, we've got to say part of that miracle, of course, is the wonder which we call the United States of America, a country that accepted us and gave us the ability to create that miracle. But what I'm saying is to change that bitterness into sweetness. It's a concerted effort. It doesn't happen by accident. To go from loss to resilience means you need to put your mind to it. Jesus, wisdom of the Father. If Jesus is the wisdom of the Father, you ask for that wisdom to be within you. And you think about that for a moment. What is that wisdom? That wisdom is to look around and know what is right, what is wrong. And these are not big moral issues. These are issues that speak to your heart. Yes, you heard me say it. I know. It's you say, well, good and bad, that's moral issues. No, it's about understanding what speaks to your heart, about doing what is right, about creating, about taking the God-given energy that you have in your life and moving it forward. And you can do this at any level. It's not dependent on your abilities, it's dependent on your willingness to open your life to this very special thing that God has given each and every one of us, and that's life itself. Everyone has different talents. Everybody comes into the game in different places. You remember the story of the talents? One gets 10,000, one gets 5,000, one gets 1,000. Yes, life is unfair. There are people that are going to have 10,000. There are people that are going to have 1,000. There are people who can do things that you cannot do, but guess what? They can't do things that you do. And once you find those things, you start understanding that those talents that you have are the means to make those bridges, to construct those bridges. And those talents are what you rely on to change that bitterness into sweetness. It's in our hands. It's our ability to really look at life and say that this is an opportunity given to me by God, and now I'm ready to take on that challenge. So, lessons we learned from Grandma. The biggest lesson is, if she did it, we can do it. Imagine that. I can tell you many, many stories about my grandma. She went on to support her five siblings who, at the same time she had gone to France, from Greece. They had gone to Armenia, and they had gone through the Stalinist regime. They had gone through some of the worst times. She went on. My grandmother was able to support them, take care of them, saw them through many, many of life crises. And she's an inspiration. On my mother's side, on that side, I have also an inspiring grandparents that really kind of like, I never got it how they did it. I'm going to tell you something, like, this was way later when I was going through some of their paperwork and everything. I mean, here's like a couple immigrants, a couple of people that just came after a genocide, and they're here. And they buy a quadplex. Yeah. They figured, okay, we'll live in one of them and we'll rent out the others. How do you do that when we can't even do that? You know, like, you got to show, well, I guess it was a lot easier back then to qualify for loans and stuff, but it couldn't have been much easier to sustain that. But here's the catch. I found in the paperwork that they had paid off this apartment complex within 9 years. I go, what? What kind of, you know, like, we're dealing with 30-year mortgages that you refinance and all that kind of stuff. Here they did it. Amazing. Amazing. I think it goes back to the bumblebee idea, doesn't it? Right? Bumblebee doesn't know that it can't fly, so it flies. And I think nobody told my grandparents that you can't do that, so they did it. Yeah, some of it is attitude. But I think most of it is to tap into that God-given energy that's inside each and every one of us. To really contemplate, to think, to take on, for instance, the song that challenges you to say that this is not about me just kicking back and letting God, like, move my, you know, move the strings so that I move. I'm not a puppet. I'm a person who's been given this beautiful gift of life. Let me exploit that life, and let me make of it the best that I can.
The people and things that went before, I know I'll often stop and think about them.
You know what? I was going to talk about the Whoopi Goldberg incident, but let's not give it any more attention than it deserves. How ridiculous, right? Anyway, here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments, okay, to wrap it up.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the next step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of you, for all of the love, the support, the prayers, everything you send our way. I really, really appreciate it. It's on those prayers that we continue broadcasting. This weekend, I'm going to be out at St. Peter at, yes, where the next step started. That's right. We're going back to the roots. And I got to tell you, you know, last week being in San Diego, it was just so beautiful. People taking time to come out of their way to say hello, to introduce themselves, to say what this podcast has meant for them in their lives. I really, really appreciate it. So please, when I tell you I'm at these places, don't ever hesitate to come up and just say hi at the very least, okay? I really, really love seeing you. Also want to do a big shout out for the Armenian America magazine. I really appreciate the nice interview that they gave me. There'll be a link on today's show notes. You can check that out as well. Let's see. On your calendar, you should mark March 19. It's a Saturday. It's Reclaim 2022. It is the sixth incarnation of the Reclaim Conference. It's a full-day conference, and it looks like it is probably going to be online. Given the current COVID circumstances, there'll probably be a small little contingency where we meet, but for the most part, it will be an online conference. I'm saying this because if you go to the show notes, there'll be a link where you can register. Think about that. It's time to register. And it's so easy. The cost of the full-day conference is $35. It's $45 at the door, but since there is no door, if you're online, right? I would imagine that last day, probably the price will go up. So listen, do yourself a favor. Save yourself $10. Do the organizers a favor by registering early so they know what they're getting in for. And check out that link and share it with people. This is like the biggest thing that happens every year. We've been doing it now for 6 years. People come up to me, oh, well, can you do it again? Because we missed it. No, we can't do it. It's not easy. Please register now. Reclaim 2022, March 19th. All right, that about does the show for us today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. We've got a few rough days ahead of us as we say goodbye formally through a funeral service for my brother-in-law. On behalf of my wife, Susan, and myself, thank you, all of you, for your kind wishes and expressions at this very, very difficult time. But our faith is really what sustains us, knowing that he lives on. He lives on in our memories, of course, but he lives on, of course, with our Heavenly Father, who makes a special point of loving each and every one of us to give us that opportunity to be together forever. On behalf of Susie, our producer, and myself, Father Voskin, I look forward to being with you again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.